It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mice, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Well, hey, y'all. So glad you joined us for this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, on today's show, we'll be chatting with Jacques Farrar from Star Roses and Plants. Now, Jacques is a world-renowned rosarian and plantsman, and he'll be joining us to chat about drought-tolerant roses and plants.
Chris, it's always a pleasure to have Jack with us, and I can't wait to talk to him about Star Roses and Plants' big wins at the Biltmore International Rose Trial. We'll get started right after a quick message from Haven Brand Soil Conditioners and the American Rose Society. So stay with us.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the Rose Photography Contest, visit ars.org.
Well, it's time to talk roses. Hey, Jacques, it's good to have you back with us.
Hi, guys. Teresa, Chris, good to be back.
We're glad to have you. Hey, big congratulations are in order for Star Roses and Plants. Three big awards at the recent Biltmore International Rose Trials. How great was that?
Well, thank you. Well, it's interesting. We participate to a lot of contests, whether, you know, public contests like the Biltmore or more private trials that we carry over the country. And, you know, it's not that I want to sound, you know, bragging or so, but we work really hard to test our roses in environments that are much tougher than the Biltmore even, and therefore it's not entirely surprising that our roses do well in such trials.
Chris and I had the pleasure of being at the trial as jurors this year, and not only was the setting unbelievable, but it was a perfect weekend, but the competition was stiff, so to win is quite an honor. Jack, how important do you think these rose trials are?
They're very important, because roses are very regional to a large extent, and having a rose successful in a place like the Biltmore, which is in a climate that is very difficult for roses, as we all know, the Carolinas, it's hot and humid there, and the roses that do well in those climates are far and in between, so it's very important to you know, to make sure that the roses we introduce will do well in those climates. To us, it's really important. Now, this being said, there are other contest in other part of the world and even in the U.S. And what's happening, you know, in the trials in California at Rose Hills, and the results will be totally different, and the roses that will win will be very different than the one that win at the Biltmore, just because of the difference in climate.
That just makes the regional testing so much more important. You know, it's great for the home gardener like me to have somebody else test in an area that's similar to mine, so I know what to buy before I spend my money and do something that is going to work in my garden. So for the home gardener, it's a big win.
Yeah, absolutely. We have actually, before we release any varieties, we try them in 12 private trial gardens, some of them being at universities, some of them being at botanic gardens, and for 2 years. So we really notice the difference in the regionality. And for us, it's really becoming very important because, like you said, Teresa, I mean, the gardening public, you know, wants to buy something that will work where they live.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Well, Jacques, I'm a real big fan of the Drift Roses, and Sweet Drift won Best Ground Cover at the Biltmore. And the term ground cover just doesn't even tell you, even though it is a wonderful ground cover, how beautiful this rose is. So could you tell our listeners a little bit about the Drift Roses in general and how they came to be and how long they've been around?
Well, I mean, the concept of the Drift Roses started really about close to 20 years ago now. That's how long it takes to get, you know, an idea and breed roses to fit that idea. And the idea was to have some roses that were fairly small in terms of the volume, but very floriferous and very disease resistant and winter hardy, and that was to feed the modern garden that is shrinking. And so we had a lot of trial and errors over the last 20 years to come up with the Drift. Actually, we introduced the series in 2008. And of course, you know, for those of you that are familiar with the economy, 2008, 2009 was not the best time to introduce new plants for the housing public. So there have been little hurdles that we have to face in the first few years, but now that with the economy rebounding and people having tried the Drift Roses over the last 5 years or so, the results have been very positive, and the word of mouth has been incredible. So we can see that now, Teresa, they're becoming very popular.
Well, I'm sort of having my own unofficial test garden here. I've got every color just about that you have. I have red, coral, peach, and apricot, and they all perform beautifully. The one that I don't have is Sweet Drift, but I know someone who has Sweet Drift. Chris, how's that one performing in your garden?
Well, I'll tell you, we've had it in the ground about a day, within hours of returning from the Biltmore, I had to have some. I went out and found seven shrubs to form a small border and planted them in the ground, they are doing magnificent. They were blooming when I bought them, you know, bud and bloom, and put them in the ground. Those have faded, and we already are starting another flush of blooms with, you know, within really less than 6 weeks.
You know what is interesting? As we were talking about regionality of roses, this is true for, I would say, 95% of the modern roses. But interestingly enough, Drift Roses, in fact, are one of the first family of roses that I know that will perform as well in your area, you know, Chris, in the Deep South, as well as in Pennsylvania, where we're based and we do our trials, or where you are, Teresa, in Chicago, as well as the West Coast. I mean, so that's the other really great feature, I think, about the Drift is they will work very well all over the country. And there's not too many plants, not just roses, but not too many plants that can say that.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I was just in my garden before the show, and I would have to say that at least 50% of the bloom right now is coming from the Drift Roses. We've had some really high temperatures, and so many of the roses are kind of taking a break, but not the Drift. They just keep going. So that makes me think that we need to talk about drought and roses. So what, other than the drips, which are doing very well in the heat, what are some other recommendations that you would have for roses that can take the heat?
Well, I mean, when you talk about heat and drought, we got to be, we got to be a little more specific. Heat and drought are two different things. You can have a lot of heat, and if you get water, that's not a problem. Roses love water, and, you know, if you get enough water, they can go through the heat without too many issues. And then there is the question about dry heat versus, you know, humidity. Chris versus West Texas. Got to be a little more specific, and it's very difficult for that reason to really come up with roses or being, you know, able to tell the audience that, yes, such roses were absolutely heat tolerant. That's not, unfortunately, I cannot make that claim. What I can tell you is that there is a lot of anecdotal references about knockout roses and drift roses performing really well in both the dry heat and the humid heat. And that's the reason why they've been so popular in the South. There's also, some anecdotal evidence that some of the old roses, especially the teas, will do well in the humid heat because they were born and raised there. And there is also some, again, it's all anecdotal, but evidence that some of the Althemia hybrids, the new one that are coming to the market, are probably a little more drought tolerant just because the parentage, come from a rose that was growing in the desert in Prussia.
Good to know.
I know it's not specific.
Do you have any tips on how to care for the roses when the temperatures are hot and are the things that we should do differently?
Yeah, I think, first of all, in terms of the water needs for drought tolerance, a good friend of mine, a mentor, told me a long, long time ago when the question was asked, to him by people wanting to know when they need to water their roses. He used to tell them, and I think it is true, that, roses need water when your grass need water. In other words, in England and places where drought are not an issue and you get your lush lawns, you know, roses will grow without any specific need for extra watering. If you grow roses in climates like California, like Texas, Alabama, where there are periods of could be pretty long period without rain, then you need to water the roses and give them the same amount of water that you would give, your lawn. But that being said, not watering like the lawn, which is pretty regularly, maybe not too much water, every maybe 2 to 3 days, depending on, the situation. It's much better to water your roses much, much deeper and at irregular intervals. That will help to develop the root system that will be much better and much deeper and can take the water much deeper in the ground and be able to withstand the dry periods a little better.
I love it that you compared it to the lawn because about 4 years ago we went through 2 years of extreme drought, 13 weeks without any rain at all. And what I noticed was that the lawn turned brown, the roses went dormant, but immediately when we had rain, both came back just like nothing had happened.
Absolutely. Roses are really, they're shrubs, what's happening, like you say, Teresa, when it gets really hot and really dry, they tend to go dormant. They go into, it's a self-defense survival mechanism. And in this case, one thing we talked about right before the show, if you, in a habit to fertilize your roses all through the growing season, I would say that when you get in a drought situation, it is better to quit the fertilization. When roses or all plants are stressed, they would not take the nutrients the way they would in a normal condition, and actually feeding the roses or your plants overall in a period of drought might be doing more damage than good.
How important do you think it would be to keep them mulched?
Mulch is paramount. Actually, we cannot say enough good things about mulch. I mean, it is one of the, it's, no, not one of the, it is the best way to conserve water and to help your plant go through those drought periods. Absolutely.
How much mulch? You know, 2 inches, 3 inches, 4 inches? What would be the best?
You know, I think you need at least, when you plant, you know, when you start to, you know, at the beginning of the season, let's say like Chris just did plant his drift roses, probably, I mean, if you can, have probably 3 inches, you know, would be a right amount. 4 would work even better, but it's a little overkill. And if you put less than 2, you don't have the full effect.
All right. Well, thanks for validating my 3 inches of mulch. That's exactly what I said.
And we did not talk about that before the show, for the record.
We did, man.
Now we have Chris completely validated here. Yeah. The show can now go on. Chris, do you have any other questions about drought and caring for the roses?
Well, you know, we talked a little bit about fertilization during a drought, and a lot of people now are using more organic methods of fertilization and in their gardens. And I'd be interested to hear Jacques' thoughts on organic fertilizers versus more chemical compound type fertilizers.
I think nutrients are nutrients. Potassium is potassium. The way the plants take it, whether the fertilization is organic or purely chemical, it may affect the way the plants react. But physiologically, the way I was taught, it doesn't make too much difference. However, there is advantages to have a organic fertilizer in the sense that somebody said one time, and I think it's very true, that when you give a chemical application of fertilizer, it's like drinking a can of soda full of caffeine and sugar. It gives a big boost, which usually the organic fertilizer don't work like that. It's more methodical. It takes a little longer. So I think it's just like in the eye of the person that has his or her garden. You know, you can do pretty much what you want there. That's your choice. I always say that the garden is kind of a reflection of who you are, and it's one of the few places where you can do pretty much whatever you please. So if you like organic, you do organic. If you like, you know, don't mind your Bayer or whatever, that's fine too. You know?
Yeah. And I guess, you know, as I travel around the country and speak to different organizations, I tend to lean more towards more organic types of fertilizers in my own garden. But, you know, I tell people it's okay to mix that up, that if, you know, I sort of look at roses as people in the sense that they like variety in their diet.
Yeah, there is that too, Chris. Absolutely. I think on the organic fertilizer has to work also a little bit with helping the soil structure a little better, because most of those teas beside the fertilizer, they really help to improve the soil structure, that's something that the chemicals probably don't do.
Right.
Jacques, let's move on to talk about some of the rose companions that you guys have got out right now. I noticed that many of the new releases have the word compact and little in their name, and we've already addressed the fact that many of our garden spaces are shrinking. People are gardening smaller spaces. They have smaller yards. Maybe they're gardening on a balcony. And one of them that I'm most interested in is Little Lace Russian Sage. I love Russian Sage, but most of them get so large that it's more space than I want to dedicate in the rose garden. So could you tell us a little bit about this Russian Sage? Is it going to stay a little more compact?
Yeah, it's going to be much more compact overall than, you know, most of the other Russian sage. And I think more generally speaking about companion plants and roses, I think that the perennials as a group of plants are blending so well with the roses. For lots and lots of reasons, when you have your hybrid teas and, you know, which are pretty tall, you know, whether it's little lace or some Veronicas or Nepetas or, you know, any type of, mounding, slow, you know, compact perennials will do very well underneath the hybrid teas. And there's also another plus, I think, is that they usually bloom at the time of the year when the roses are in between flushes, or in the case of hybrid tea, maybe not looking so good in the midsummer. And they tend to hide some of the, you know, of those issues. We've been trying and experimenting, you know, mixing roses with perennials as star roses and plants for years, and that's kind of part of what started our thinking about breeding and bringing new perennials to the market. In fact, it's just such a nice companion plant for roses.
Oh, they sure are. This time of year, you know, even the healthiest of plants, some of our hybrid teas are getting what Chris calls naked knee syndrome. So having something just to hug up around. Another plant that I saw on your list was Yarrow Moondust. I absolutely love yarrow, but all of my yarrow just wants to be 5 foot tall. So I'm really excited about this little compact moondust.
Yes, I think this is one of the objectives in what we do in breeding perennials is to bring more compact versions of some of those very very nice hardy perennials that tend to become a little bit out of proportion. And so I'm glad that you like those, Teresa, because we think that they have a lot of potential. Absolutely.
Well, I think we're learning, too, that a lot of these different plants are host to some of the beneficial bugs that we need around our roses. So just having roses by themselves doesn't make for an overall healthy rose garden sometimes. So having some of these things like yarrow and sage and those kinds of things so are beneficial.
Yeah, I think Nepetas are also very nice. They're making, they usually make a nice little blanket, low level. They wouldn't fit well with drifts because they're about the same size, but they will fit really well with floribundas and hybrid teas, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can honestly say that I'm looking out at my garden, and I have about three different perennials that I thought were going to be about 24 inches, and they're a good 4 foot. They're actually hiding the roses. So
well.
this is good news. Thanks for all your research, because I'm going to need them.
Well, you know, and just going back for a second to drought tolerance, if you don't mind, Teresa, it's... The challenge also today is, as most of roses are moving from being budded on Dr. Yue into their own root system, well, all of a sudden, you have to add this new criteria that you don't know when you start whether a rose on its own root will be more, you know, susceptible to drought or less than where they were all budded, because then you had the drought resistance of the understock, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Adds another interesting twist to what we do when we try to introduce new roses.
Well, we're so glad that you're doing all this research, so we don't have to.
We're trying, Teresa, and thank you for your kind words. We're trying. We're not there yet, but that's our goal. Actually, I will leave you with this little thing that I have not convinced the rest of my team yet that we should do that. But in our test trial garden in California, in Watsonville, that we have here, which we call affectionately Rose Hell West, where we look at the roses without spraying. And by the way, I don't know if you realize, Chris, because you're mostly, concerned with black spot, where you're at. I can show you, if you ever come my way, that, we can kill roses as well from rust that you can there where you were with black spot as easily. And...
Right.
so to maintain a trial garden here in California, we do use a drip irrigation. There is no way we could go through the summer, without watering. And one of the things that I'm trying to figure out how to do is to find a test plot where we would not water for maybe two weeks, three weeks, since all the roses are en route, and see which one can withstand the worst abuse.
Right.
But, we know it's coming. We know it's coming because water, and especially right now here in the West, as you know, we're in the third year of drought, water is becoming more and more an issue, and we'll have to adjust as well.
Right.
You know, those types of conditions are, you know, reminiscent of some of the Earthkind rose trials. So I know that, you know, some of the knockout, the red knockout was involved in, and, you know, they just go and plant those out in the field and leave them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and talking about sweet drift and coral drift that Teresa mentioned, I have a really good anecdote about their drought resistance. I sent them undercoat, so about 10 years ago, to a good friend of mine at the Texas A&M Research Station in Everton, which is near Tyler, Texas. And he got them in the field, do the evaluation, then they moved on, they changed, they got rid of everything else. It was annuals not just roses in there. And he came back the summer after, about in July, in this field that, was kind of abandoned, and looked at, so no water, no maintenance whatsoever. And he called me to ask me what was that coral red rose and that pink rose that were there under the code number to see if we were going to introduce them because they were doing so well without water in the 100-degree heat. So that's why I believe those are coral drift and sweet drift. So.
Oh, it's good to have them in those places.
We need to tell them. We need to put that story on the front page of every newspaper.
This is really important stuff.
Well, it is. And, you know, again, that was anecdotal because we're not set yet to do really drought tolerance experiments, but we're getting closer and closer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I for one, really appreciate the research and development that you guys at Star Roses put into to your not only your roses but your perennial line and your shrubs. And
yes.
It makes all the difference once those plants enter the garden. And I just want to say thank you. I don't know how often people call you up and say thank you for doing that, but I'm saying thank you tonight.
Well, I appreciate that, Chris. You know, sometimes people say, you know, you spend too much time testing and trialing, you know, but you see, that's my answer to that. We've been doing that for 110 years, and, you know, maybe one day we stop, but it'll be after me.
Well, I can tell you that all of my rose friends, it's a big comfort to know that someone is out there sending these roses to hell before they get to us.
That's right.
Because, as you know, Teresa, I
think I told you my motto is, we got to kill them in our rose trials before you get the chance to kill them in your garden.
Oh, that is so true. Because, you know, if we get some... we hand some of these new gardeners a prima donna, and it doesn't do well, they're done. And, you know, I just think they're missing a lot of the greatest things in life, tending a rose. So, you know, we want to put something in their hand. I've given a ton of drift roses out as gifts because I want, you know, someone to have success, and, you know, they can have other kinds of roses too. But once you give them something beautiful that they can be successful with, you know, it makes all the difference. The way you start is the way you want to continue.
Teresa, you nailed it, you know, and it's true for all plants, and I think it's the job of all the you know, ornamental plant breeders and introducers to make sure that we bring to the market plants that are going to be more and more foolproof. Now, they're still living creatures, so, but you're absolutely right. I mean, we got to create an experience that's successful because, like you said, you know, first person coming to buy a plant and kill it's going to, his or her first comment will be, oh, I did something wrong, and then, you know, being scared. We try to avoid that as much as possible.
Well, I know 3 years ago when I first got introduced to drift, I had a local IGC some guys come out to look at my roses. I said, I want more of these, and I'm sure a lot of your customers will. And within 3 weeks, they went from having none and not really knowing a whole lot about them to having just racks of them, and they just flew off the shelf. Yes.
Great. Thank you. That's again. That's the type of thing we like to hear for lots of reasons, obviously. But this has been our experience. You know, they've been building momentum. The date of the launch in 2008 and 2009 wasn't the perfect timing, but we see today that the demand is increasing, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of where the Knockout Rose was in 2003, 2004, when it wasn't yet the thing that it has become, but it was starting to gain a lot of popularity, and all that on the word of mouth of successful people that had them in their garden. And we just can hope that, the same success can happen to the Drift. It's a totally different look of the plant, but we hope that they'll be as successful.
Well, it sounds like the Knockout had the same kind of thing that you hear when the guys get up and they accept their Academy Awards. They usually say, you know, it took me a really long time to get here. It just doesn't seem like it. But, you know, who would ever thought that the Knockout Rose hasn't been the most popular rose since the day it was released? But I guess it did take a little while.
We had no clue.
Teresa,
for the record, and for your audience, we had no clue. I wish we were so smart. We knew it was a good. we knew it was a good rose. We didn't know it was going to be that good. And with the Drift, we knew also we had a really nice series. We're in the process to find out how good it really is, because now it's in your hands. It's no longer in ours.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm loving mine, so.
Great.
Well, Zach, it's been wonderful to have you with us as always. We appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight.
No problem. It's always fun, Teresa. And Chris, start to stay cool.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to tell you, to stay cool. We need to really tell Chris that. He's down there in the deep south.
Yeah, thanks so
ahead,
much.
Sorry.
It's great to talk with you.
Yes, I understand the temperature has been in the 90s and 80% humidity. It could be a soccer stadium in Brazil.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got to get that soccer in there.
Well, folks, wanted to make sure that you know how to learn more about Star Roses and Plants, about Drift Roses, Knockouts, and their entire collection of not only roses but perennials and shrubs. Visit starrosesandplants.com. You'll find there a load of information on your favorite plant varieties. They even have a place where you can create a shopping list, and, of course, a handy find your local retailer where you can find the Drift Roses that we spoke about on tonight's show, as well as Knockouts and some of their other perennials and shrubs. That's Star Roses and Plants. Well, friends, you know, it's hard to believe we're at the end of another broadcast, but we'll be back soon with another awesome guest. So until next time, happy gardening from your friends at the Rose Chat Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.